You're listening to Classicism in Conversation, a project of the Institute of Classical Architecture and Art, examining the relevance of the classical tradition today. We're excited to bring new topics to new audiences and want your feedback. Write to podcasts@classicist.org with your comments. Enjoy the show. This show is sponsored by Historical Concepts. You can find them online at historicalconcepts.com or on Instagram at Historical Concepts.
A lot of what we do is invisible in the final product.
I'm not sure they still know what we spent all those hours in studio doing.
You have to speak so many languages.
I thought that everyone who went into architecture was going to be this world-class architect.
The idea that the architecture that you do could just change the world dramatically.
You can still make a difference, but not at the same scale as some of the architects operate at.
Architecture school is not just drawing.
Pull up a chair and sit down with us for a post-studio chat as we discuss the top 10 things we learned in traditional architecture school. My name is Caroline Colella, and I will be your host for this episode. Join me and a few recent college graduates for a conversation and some reflection. The last 5 years of our lives have been dedicated to the study of traditional architecture at the University of Notre Dame. In addition to learning how to design projects of all kinds and hand draft and watercolor render, we learned more than we would have ever thought possible through the uniqueness of studying architecture at the university level. The friends joining me for today's roundtable discussion are
Alessandra Turi, I'm from upstate New York.
Victoria Cardozo, I'm from Westport, Massachusetts.
Matthew Lumo, I'm from Floral Park, New York.
Patrick Dunleavy, I'm from Orlando, Florida.
Austin Prohl, I'm from Chillicothe, Ohio.
And me, Caroline Colella, originally from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Though we have learned countless things in architecture school, in preparing for today's podcast, we collectively decided to narrow down our favorite lessons to share with you. Lesson one, architecture, not what we thought it would be.
Architecture definitely did not turn out to be what my childhood imagination had it being. Watching the Brady Bunch and seeing Mike Brady draft from home and looking at some of the architects that I admired growing up, I thought that everyone who went into architecture was going to be this world-class architect. There's only so many people out there destined to be designing the most famous skyscrapers. I've learned that it's almost more important to just be a good architect rather than a great architect. Being a good architect has a more immediate impact on your community. I've found that to be a more profound way to interact with the people around you.
I think when I first initially thought about architecture, it was very much along the same lines as you. It was the architect idea, the idea that the architecture that you do could just change the world dramatically. Architecture that we make and that we design can have that effect, but it's more of a slow process. And it really does depend on the context.
What I didn't think about architects was when I drove down the road, there were the big projects that you'd think, oh, that'd be cool to be a part of one day. But then you realized all the buildings between your home and to get there also were designed by architects. There's still an opportunity in those smaller moments to be a good architect, as Vicky said, one in which you can still make a difference, but just perhaps not at the same scale as architects operate at.
One of the harsher realizations for me in architecture school was learning about all of the technical knowledge that I was going to need. Growing up, I thought you just drew a pretty picture and then the rest was the engineer's job. But there's a lot more to our designs and what we need to know.
I totally never even thought about how much design went into all of the buildings. Before construction, just wasn't in my mind. I just thought about the finished product. So I think my initial impression of architects, I may have confused them with the general contractor, actually putting the stones together and building the building. It's really opened my eyes to how much work goes into every stage of the process.
And that's definitely something for me that came to light more so once we got into architecture school. And we started having classes from structures and other technical classes, as well as the opportunity to try other things that are just larger parts of the industry, real estate opportunities, where you just learn that also being an architect is so much relationship based, and you're bringing so many different people and opinions to the table. And it's your job at some point to manage them and hopefully bring them all under one roof and channel that into one project that everyone can get behind.
I had no idea that I would be taking the amount of engineering courses or building science courses. I really thought that's something that other people did, but it makes what we studied in school that much more of a comprehensive experience. Architecture school is not just drawing. It's not just design thinking. It's art, architecture, of course, history, building science, engineering, project management. There are so many things that you have to become literate in. You have to speak so many languages, not only in the profession after, as we've learned through internship and whatnot, but also during school. And you have to be taking all of those classes simultaneously. And the ability to learn how to transition from taking a history class in the morning to your third level of structures in the afternoon, and then on to design studio, that flexibility that we learn in school that we're trained in allows us to become literate in so many languages. Lesson two, no one in school knows what we do.
Just like a lot of us had that foggy vision of what an architect really does when we were younger, I think a lot of our fellow classmates outside of the School of Architecture, but within the university, a lot of our friends really throughout our 5 years didn't know what we do in architecture school. And I'm not sure they still know what we spent all those hours in studio doing, hours on end every night when they wouldn't see us for weeks straight. I think it's pretty funny because we make up one of the closest knit schools in the whole university. And I think that's true for most architecture schools across the country. We still don't really know what we're learning and going through all these classes for. And at some point, it's above our heads. So therefore, it's above a lot of other people's heads too.
One of the misconceptions that a lot of people get is they just think that we're in studio all the time. And I think that is somewhat the case. Like, we are in studio a lot. That might be where some of the divide comes, where they just don't understand what we do because we're not out in the world as much and talking to them. But I think there's so many other things that they just don't understand. Ours is really the epitome of the liberal arts education, where we learn so many different things. So many different things contribute to the field of architecture. A lot of people don't fathom that because they usually go to university for a single degree. And the degree usually has a very narrow path that takes a lot of different courses that helps you develop into that specific profession. Architecture is very different in that field. You have tons of different things that directly contribute to it.
One of my favorite memories with a friend who did not study architecture was when I had just been deadline week and we had 24 hours to prepare for our review. And my friend comes up to me and asks, "Hey, Caroline, when can we come watch you present your artwork?" And I remember thinking, "My artwork? You mean my 2-scale technical drawings? My wall section that I've slaved over? The design components I've so meticulously put together over weeks on end? That? Well, I'm presenting tomorrow." But they thought when I said, "Oh, I'm drawing and I'm watercoloring," that means that, oh, it just is a pretty picture that I'm putting on the wall. Like, that was the epitome of the understanding of the non-architecture regular person in undergrad university. They're there to support their architecture friends. They wish they saw them more, but they don't really have a clear understanding of what we go through on a day-to-day level. If they think I'm working on my art late at night, they are really wrong.
A lot of what we do is invisible in the final product. They don't know how many iterations went through to get to that pretty picture that's up on the wall. They can only see the end result. And so that might be why everything is shrouded in mystery up until that point, because we're not out and showing it to them. We only show them the end product.
A positive about architecture school is that you're not restrained necessarily by budget or other restrictive factors. So you can have this project that is just your dream building. But the downside with architecture school is that none of it's ever getting built. We get to do all of this design work and we get to run to extreme lengths with it, but it's just architecture school. It's just for the sake of practicing design and learning new skills. Caroline, when you were speaking earlier about your art, one of the favorite activities that I like to describe to my peers is the act of stretching watercolor paper. I just think it's so funny to explain to someone that I take this drawing that I've spent hours drafting on watercolor paper and then I submerge it and soak it in water and then staple it to plywood so that it's taut. And then I'm just going to paint with more watercolor over it. That's one of the most entertaining things to try and describe to someone not in the School of Architecture, and especially not in our classical School of Architecture where we're doing watercolor renderings for everything.
My freshman year, I spent at the University of Miami where I didn't watercolor at all, and all of my drawings were either drawn on vellum or mylar, and gosh forbid I get any water on those. And so I come to Notre Dame and I get to the point of stretching my very first project, and I said to my friends, are you sure I can get water on this paper? I don't want to destroy it. That was such a foreign concept. And so even from an architecture student, I'm sure you guys all felt the same way the first time you stretched your plates too. It's such a funny thing that we do. Who really understands it? I know I surely didn't the first time.
I have a mini heart attack every time I put that first pour of water on my drawings.
My parents definitely still don't quite get architecture. When we were just wrapping up thesis, at one point, they were like, you got 4 weeks left. Why don't you just grind really hard for a couple weeks and then finish early? And at the time, I was in a room with some of my classmates and I was talking to my parents on the phone. And so I turned the phone on speaker and asked the room, is it possible for me to finish early from 4 weeks out? To which they all, same response, laughed like you guys. Partly because architecture is such a discipline that you can just keep progressing and iterating and working through. But then also just no one has a sense of how long this actually takes. You only see so much in the final product, but it takes a lot to get there. And that sometimes is lost upon other architects, but then especially anyone outside the field. Usually the work is very clear and linear as far as what it took to create something. But architecture is just so different that same way we didn't know it when we were getting involved with architecture, we still are trying to educate people now that we're in it, even our parents.
That definitely rings true. Some of my roommates in college were like, man, you spend late nights at studio and you're still not done with your project. It takes a long time to complete it.
We've all been suggested by our non-architecture friends, if we just invested in creating better time management skills, we would be finished early and all would be well. A lot of us really do try in time management, but alas.
True.
I think we have developed good time management skills. If we hadn't, we'd be in much more dire situations.
That's a lesson in itself.
Yeah.
That's what sophomore year is just design. Keep designing, do so many projects that you can learn the steps so that you can time manage. That's why sophomore year is tough.
The gauntlet.
Yeah.
The gauntlet. This whole lesson of no one in school knows what we do. This is a really important point because it shows that it's a broader industry-wide problem where we also need to do better about educating people regarding architecture as a profession. At the end of the day, architects design it, and it's our job as a service industry to sort of educate them and do the best we can, especially with our classical tendencies and why we feel that this is something we hold true, because it's not something that they get a lot of experience with. So again, one more role that I did not think I'd be perhaps undertaking as an architect. A continuing education component of the people around me has been something that's definitely new, but a challenge that's exciting to undertake.
Lesson 3, the world needs architects.
So our younger selves didn't know what architects did. Our classmates outside of the School of Architecture still don't know what we do. The public doesn't seem to really know what architects do. So why does our profession still exist? And I have a pretty funny quote to share with you guys, and I want to get your reactions. How is architecture still a profession? LOL, just copy the other buildings. Nobody cares. What do you guys say to that?
That hurts, Allie.
That idea of just copy pasting a building next door to its identical form is painful and creates this idea of such a dystopian society. That's what I picture when I like read those fiction books that are these dystopian worlds. I just picture copy and paste buildings in a line down a row, and it just seems so uncomfortable to be there.
Yeah, and so contradictory to our education in not only designing for place, but also respecting the context.
A few semesters ago, I was in a studio where we had to design a consulate in India. We were meeting with some officials who were giving us a little bit of history on consulate and embassy design. And we learned about how for a period of time, they went with what they called an SED, a standard embassy design, where they essentially took the same plan and building form and used it in different locations around the entire world, in different environments with different climates, different topography, different soil and ground, using the same exact design or as close to the same exact design as possible in such varying places. And then they ended up trashing that idea after several years of implementing it because it wasn't creating good design, it wasn't working with the area, and it wasn't respecting the area. So I think that that is one of the times firsthand that I saw that copy-paste idea and how they didn't like it, and now they're changing the way that they're doing that.
Becky, I was also in that studio with yep. you. And that's a great point that you bring up about the repetitive nature of those certain consulates. Something that really stuck out to me during that project was it really showed how far-reaching the impact architecture had. Mm-hmm. When the U.S. would go and put a new consulate in this new area, it was the architect's job to create that first impression. And so all of these people who might not always have that interaction with the United States, their first interaction was with the product of the architect. And so that created something that might go far beyond the end user and interacts with different facets mm-hmm. of society somewhere halfway across the globe.
Yeah, and I think part of the reasoning behind their goal with that is that, for example, embassy and consulate design is so complex. I mean, we learned that we weren't even allowed to know most of the program. It was so complex, and the security and all of those other things that go into it. So I can understand where you want to be able to find a way to make that aspect of the design easier, but I don't think that that was the answer. And I think they discovered that too, that that's just copying and pasting the same exact thing is not the answer. It's our job as architects to be creative and to come up with new solutions and better solutions to certain problems.
Vicky, Matt, I think you're exactly right. I think that at the end of the day, architecture as a profession is the profession of problem solving. Looking at the example of the consulate, using the same international style building in all of these places around the world, they realized it was not the right answer. At Notre Dame, we learned that designing for one's context and responding to the needs of the community and creating places that people want to live in is really at the core of what architects should be trying to do today. At the end of the day, architecture is needed because we're placemakers. We're solving the problem of creating places where people want to live and exist and work and learn and worship. These are the problems that we have today. How are we going to live? That's ultimately what we're looking at, and why architecture as a profession still exists is because we still have these human problems. And while we may borrow from precedent and look to history and existing fabric to inform our designs, we're using that precedent to create new designs and form new solutions for our clients, for our communities, and for our teams and families.
How architecture is still a profession when you could just copy other buildings? It sounds like it's coming from someone outside the industry.
For sure.
When we talk about real estate, it's inherently said in like real estate 101 that the reason it exists in every single property is completely different. Every single property, no matter if it's like directly adjacent, it's the same size, it's inherently different in some fashion. So in the same way that every property or piece of land is different, why should the solution on that land be the exact same? I don't think the public wants to live that way. No one wants to live in a dystopian cookie cutter box. And we've seen that and we've seen it fail. So that's why architects still exist.
Lesson 4. There is more than one way to skin the cat. Paired with lesson 5. Design is not linear.
We already touched on the fact that a lot of people outside of architecture don't see all the design elements that go into it. When you show them your final drawings, they don't see how many iterations that came before it or what you tried that didn't work. I know for me personally, sophomore year, our first design studio, that was always hardest for me. And it wasn't because we were just learning the classical orders or learning how to watercolor and learning all these different things. It was really learning how to design. And that was a big learning curve for me. Maybe you don't design the same way as somebody else, your studio neighbor. And you have to figure out exactly how that works. That's what the bulk of the time spent in studio was doing. It's not production, it's all that design.
Sophomore year is going through the design process over and over again so that you can learn how to do it and learn better ways to do it and learn where you can improve on your efficiency with certain things. We grow up learning that everyone has strengths and weaknesses, and it's important to learn yours and to continue to cultivate your strengths, but also to acknowledge your weaknesses. Design is one of those things where certain people are really, really skilled in one facet of design and others in differing facets. It's important that we learn how to do everything and then learn what we're good at, because I may be skilled in one phase of design and you more skilled in another, but together, when we're working in the real world, we'll be a team, and then we can work to get the best design in the end. So it's important that we go through that process sophomore year and, like Pat said earlier, go through the gauntlet and learn all of the different ways that we can accomplish a design.
You might have a different way of actually learning to design, but everybody goes through the same process of learning how to learn.
I think that lesson number 4, there's more than one way to skin the cat, was definitely one of the tougher realizations I had in architecture school. I was someone who came from perhaps considering potentially going the engineering direction, which has a much more, at least in my mind at the time, a rigorous understanding of like what is right and wrong, in the same way perhaps math is, where there is very clearly a process and a right answer. So then when I got to architecture school and I had this tough realization that there's probably a chance that there's multiple ways to do it, you would think that that would be a reassuring idea, like, oh, there's multiple right answers. But I think for me, for a while, that was challenging, that I kept wanting to sort of iterate, or this isn't quite perfect yet. And not to say that you still shouldn't strive for perfection in our industry, but it's definitely challenging to accept the fact that it's good. Someone else can do something different and it's good as well, but that there's not a perfect answer.
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge others' points of view and to learn from it and discuss it, but there's not one right or wrong way. And so it's important to be able to look at all of the different ways that we can design certain aspects and learn from them and grow together.
Exactly. Architecture school teaches you that our art is so subjective. There is more than one right way to do it. There's more than one right way to enter a building. There's more than one right way to lay out circulation. It's hard, but it definitely creates a learning experience on how we can each learn to take criticism well and at the same time come to our own conclusions even after review and after we've completed the project and heard what other people think. It's important that we come to our own conclusion and learn that if there's a different way that we see that's better. Once you've decided what your conclusion is, you can always go back and change it. Design can't be linear, which is part of what makes architecture school such an adventure.
Your own personal design is not linear, as well as the industry is not linear, which is probably the most exciting part about being an architect or being in this field, because all the answers aren't here. You're constantly challenged every day to face something new or to perhaps question your own design principles and decisions. So that ability to continue to face new challenges and excitement each day and to continue to adapt and evolve is definitely a challenge, but one I think anyone who is in this field takes up and is excited to take on each day.
It's what makes it fun. Lesson 6, discourse is important.
We were given the tools and necessary foundations to promote and to defend traditional architecture and urbanism. That is where the importance of architectural discord really comes in. Having a discussion about different opinions of design result in a better understanding of what good design means. What the early differences of opinion actually helped me do is to listen and to be patient while learning how traditional architecture and urbanism can contribute to humanity. The more I understood, the better my design sensibility became. I still held that good design is good design, but now through a lens of architectural language that has been around for centuries. The journey to understanding would have never been possible if it wasn't for these discussions that I had with my fellow classmates.
Freshman year, when we were discussing whether or not this was the right path for us to be studying traditional architecture, those early discussions helped me as I was trying to decide what kind of architect and designer I wanted to be in the future. Where would I be after 5 years? And if you had asked me as a freshman, would I be where I stand now? I would say absolutely not. The opportunity through discourse, whether it be with my friends or with professors or with outside jurors, I've had some great mentors and internships. That discourse really helps us not only formulate design sensibility and decisions in our work, but in the formation that we have as emerging professionals, right? In what we're going to make this profession for our lives. So I think that if we were to only hear one perspective and not engage with our classmates, our mentors, our professors, they're learning all we can, we would be at a disadvantage. And our work would not be as interesting, but also our formation, we would not be able to be as well-rounded individuals or professionals.
Those early conversations that we had, if we didn't have that, we would be in completely different spots than we are currently.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, discourse is so important because architecture really teaches you that your mind needs to be open, right? So you can only definitely receive all of these different opinions, whether it be a talk with your friend or professor, or whether it be receiving critique during a review. You can only learn from those experiences if your mind is open. And I think that's a lesson in its own, that in order to grow, you need to be open to the different opinions that you may cross and be able to decide for yourself what is right in the end.
We got to know our professors on a much deeper level than students in other disciplines might. And that allowed us to have conversations and to have more discourse than I think would have been possible had we been pursuing another field of study, because we're able to talk about these ideas and to challenge our professors and for our professors to challenge us right back. That is what has led me to have a more understanding view of all fields of architecture.
Even within our own school, which has a very cohesive, overarching philosophy, each professor has their own opinion. We have professors that disagree on things, and they have these amazing conversations about why they believe what they believe. And I think by seeing either the conversation of ourselves with our professors, or even professors against or professors with professors, you have this really interesting dialogue that you can learn from, you can listen to. And I think going back to what I said earlier, that is what helped me through these past 5 years, is really listening to that, listening and being able to respond in an intelligent way instead of just attacking the other person's point of view. You can really take in what they have to say and try to understand from their point of view. And I think that was one thing that I've really cherished, and why even within a single set of philosophy, you can have multiple opinions.
Do you have a particular moment or conversation of discourse where you felt like it was either really formational for you or definitely sort of changed your perspective, or perhaps just an ongoing discourse with a particular professor or colleague that was very helpful?
There's one professor that we had in Rome that really challenged all of us to think about things in a different way. And whether or not I fully hopped on board with everything that she taught us, it definitely challenged me. And I know it challenged most of us to think about design in a different way that we had not been previously taught. Most of us walked away from that experience thoroughly appreciating the impact that she had on our education and the way that we think about design and space and objects and not just architectural design, but just design and design theory in general.
During our time in Rome, we attended a classical university and architecture program. However, it was exciting to have this teacher, this professor, who came from more of a modern background. But she was someone who also had a very deep appreciation for history, which is much more in the vein of our traditional program. It was exciting, sort of going back to this idea of discourse, to have someone to challenge something that can sometimes feel like we're being preached to a lot when you have sort of this one philosophy, but definitely opened the door and challenged us to defend in the same way that we talk about how it's so important for us whenever we shape our design philosophies and put up a project that we're always having to defend our decisions. So it's definitely helpful to have someone who was respectful and that they engaged and were understanding where we are coming from a historical precedent standpoint, but also challenged us to look at space and architecture in new ways.
Lesson number 7, architecture is built for people, not architects.
As you drive down the road and we're a young aspiring architect, I, for one, never thought about how at the end of the day, these aren't buildings for the architect, but that they're for the people that occupy them. And that I think it's so important to constantly remember this because we are a service industry, but at the end of the day, this is why it's so fulfilling because it is for people all around us. And it's so exciting to see the work that we do be engaged with on a day-to-day basis by so many people. And the better job we do, the more then perhaps they don't have to even think about all these different things. But we have such a direct impact in people's lives, whether they know it or not. Was this something you guys knew before you came to Notre Dame and recognized in the profession? Or is this something that you sort of came to know through our education or through other experiences?
One thing I remember being told sophomore year is don't refer to your project as my project or my building, because it's not mine. It's your proposal, but it's your proposal for someone else, for a city. And it's not a project that's attached to you. It's attached to everyone who it's going to influence.
Growing up, I knew which spaces made me happy, whether that was for personal sentimental reasons or for the inherent design, whether that was the proportions of the room or the color scheme or the layout or just the memory, whatever it was, I knew spaces made me happy and certain ones were not as comfortable to be in. But then going through architecture school and learning about design history and design theory is where we learn why or how to make spaces more comfortable and more appealing, especially depending on the building's use and the building's occupants. For example, one thing that I focused on with one of my projects was designing for those that were hard of hearing or visually impaired. And that was a challenge that I set out for myself to see how I could make those spaces more comfortable for that certain community of people. And I think that that's something that we learned throughout school.
We're actually creating an experience through architecture. We're creating, whether that's a cityscape, whether that's the individual's personal home. In the case of a city, you're creating a beautiful walking experience, hierarchy and details that people can experience. On the opposite side of things, the private side, you're creating homes that people will have memories with and really shape the way that they are raised, that they live. Both of them have equal value in how they help create a person's identity and shape. And that, I think that was one thing that really drew me to architecture in the first place, is that you have this opportunity to help and create a lasting experience.
Designing for impact doesn't have to be a big thing. Oh, I'm designing a homeless shelter. Oh, I'm designing somewhere mm-hmm. where people can get aid in some way.
those are very worthy causes and great projects to design for, but any project can be designed for impact if you think about it that way. You're impacting the lives of so many people who are going to pass through those doors for whatever reason, whether they're working or learning or living. Every project has the ability to impact lives, and I think that that's definitely a design approach. Classical architecture and traditional architecture today, and designing for impact or designing for people, human-centered design, what relationship do you think exists there?
Classical design is not, it is design. It's not so much a style as much as a philosophy and an approach to design. So in that capacity, I think human-focused design is at the forefront of that. In the same way, when you design for place and you design for context, it's always with the end user and should be. I'd like to think that after all these years with architecture, that that's probably a universal idea. But it, when you look around and you've been in buildings that have not been perhaps great or great spaces, as Vicky's touched on, it's clear that that's still not something that necessarily everyone is carrying out or is focusing on in their design. So I think that's part of the reason that classical teaching and the way we learned it at school, but then also through continuing education, through things like that, with organizations like the ICAA, is an opportunity to have these discussions and to continue to push people to really focus on what you're doing it for.
With great architecture comes great responsibility.
Ah, yes. It's above my door.
Lesson 8, design for place, not for pride.
We just talked about designing for context a little bit. And that's something our classical education has really stressed from the beginning. And it's really obvious to us all now that traditional buildings in a traditional context create something cohesive. And that's nice, but I didn't really get it until I lived in one of those cohesive urban fabrics. I could always pick out when a building didn't belong, but until I was there, I didn't realize, oh, it's not just about a building. It's about the whole place that building is creating by speaking to the buildings around it. The building is important to create a sense of place. When we were in Rome, we had one professor who used to quote from Alberti a lot, and he'd talk about being a good second architect, because during the Renaissance, usually you'd start a building, but maybe it wouldn't get finished in your lifetime. Like St. Peter's, you go through a series of architects, and all of those subsequent architects were working towards something bigger. They wanted to all look towards that same ideal, not just do something that they could do, but do something greater than themselves. And I think that's what we do when we think about building for a city. It's not just about our individual buildings. We have to think about why we are building.
That is something that has definitely been at the core of our education and something that's a continuous challenge and one that's exciting for us, because as we have touched on, that perhaps now more than ever, we're always going to have to engage with context, but we're not always going to be able to design in a place like passage-rich context. So the challenge of how to approach a place that has a variety of levels of cohesiveness or completeness is a challenge for us when we do, at the end of the day, can only focus on one building. So choosing what context to address, when to deviate from that, challenge the rest of the context to improve its design to a different level, is something that's challenging, but something that we all sort of have to continue to engage with.
One really good example of this is our thesis. We actually get to choose where we design our project at. You choose a location, but you also have to think about and distill all the context in your area, whether that's the natural environment, whether that's the built dense environment. These are all things that are really important to look at. And I think the thesis was the perfect example for us, at least, because we create this project ourselves. It's kind of the culmination of everything that we've learned. By choosing a specific location that is either close to us or that we think we can make a large impact to, we're not only looking at the context, but we're really trying to design for place. And I think that is kind of the epitome of what our education has been trying to teach us. It really stresses that point.
This is not a traditional agenda to just get every building in a town to be designed in a certain way. Place should be acknowledged in a variety of ways through materiality and through scale, and not necessarily just style alone. Every style has a place where it fits into its context. It's the idea of a style that doesn't fit, whether a contemporary building in a traditional neighborhood or a traditional building in a very modern neighborhood. Place, regardless of your stance, is what is so important. For example, look at what they call the Wedding Cake building in Rome, where the architectural design of it is beautiful, but it's not fit for the context of Rome. And while that goes with the political nature that it was built, it doesn't fit inside the context. And even though, you know, buildings in Rome are built at a larger scale than many buildings in the US, it still just dwarfs the entire surrounding area. So that's a perfect example that we've all experienced living so close to it in Rome, that even though the architectural aspect of it is beautiful, it does not fit in the context.
I kind of like the monument. It was built as a grand monument in Rome, the Vittorio Emanuele II monument, Victor Emmanuel II monument. It's very centrally located and offers views all the way down a major street running through the heart of Rome. As it's situated up on a hill, for me, in many ways, it harkens back to a lot of other monuments throughout ancient Rome and ancient Greece, where if you were a emperor, ruler, you had an opportunity to build on such a grand scale. And it's much more contemporary, but I think it harkens to that. And it's one of the few opportunities where you have a chance to go big. Perhaps it's a bit overscaled, but for me personally, it's something I always appreciate as a easy point of wayfinding in the city, and something that's definitely comforting to always see whenever I go back to Rome.
Each design decision comes with a cost. And so when we're talking about designing for place over designing for pride, perhaps we don't design exactly what our vision originally was or what we would want our firm to project at any time. But instead, the cost of that becomes our lack of pride. It enriches by gaining a design that would be for a community, that would be bringing people together, perhaps contributing to an urban fabric in a more positive way than if it were exactly what we had originally designed or wanted. The cost of putting away one's pride does not outweigh the positive it can do if you decide to design for place.
That relates to what I had mentioned earlier about learning through architecture school, that it's important to be a good architect and not necessarily a star architect, that you need to design for what the community and the place needs and not necessarily to get your name out there. Architecture is about more than us. Hopefully, if we design and build correctly, it will outlive us. So it's about more than just our name out there and more about creating a building and a space that will be beneficial for the place and the community and the people that use it.
All of us in our careers eventually will come to a point where we have to decide if we're going to design for originality in a space or if we're going to design for continuity, if we're going to break the fabric or if we're going to keep with the fabric and keep with the vernacular architecture of a place. It's really important to consider the context of a place and really designing for all people, not just for ourselves, designing for everyone around us. It's a defining feature of how will we contribute to a space, how will we contribute to a community, and how will we contribute to the world, really.
That's an excellent point, Allie. Originality versus continuity, which one do we want to choose? That's the beauty of traditional design and architecture. You can have both originality and continuity. The idea of using architectural precedent from the past and designing in a classical or traditional manner is that you're using elements that people have recognized for centuries, if not more, as beautiful things. You're using these repeated elements, but can do it in a new and original way that does respect the place. In traditional architecture school, that was a big takeaway, that you can try and address both. You can try and be both respectful of your context and your community, using traditional building materials, looking at the street elevation, looking at how to contribute to the urban fabric. But you are also looking to design something that is so completely new in a really beautiful way that traditional architecture allows us to explore.
As far as originality goes, sometimes it gets a bad rap among more traditionally focused philosophies, and that sometimes it's associated with modern, and that you're always pumping your ego and trying to do something that's purely for you. But I don't think it necessarily has to be that way. I think part of originality is a lot of what Caroline touched on, and that you have an opportunity to still be an architect and design something new and unique. Every single property is different. Everything requires a different solution. And then as far as continuity goes, in a place where perhaps there was a fabric that had been erased or destroyed, sometimes continuity needs a bit of originality to bring back continuity. To bring that back, you might have to break from what fabric is there because it doesn't have a place in the area. It doesn't have a pedestrian experience. It's not walkable. As an opportunity to potentially bring some of that back, perhaps you have to divert from continuity and the context that presently exists, but to either bring back an old precedent, an old fabric in the area that worked well, or to bring in, be original and bring in something that's from elsewhere to create a overall, hopefully a better place. Part of the challenge that we have as architects is when to walk that line.
Lesson 9, you can't do it alone.
I think we can all agree that this is probably one of the most important points. Over the past 5 years, we've grown together as a class, and without the friendship that we've had and the friends to bounce the ideas off of, or discuss design ideas in general, that studio feels kind of hollow. This was quite evident in our last couple months at the university. Everyone ended up doing amazing projects by the end of it from isolation, but at the same time, we missed such a vital part of the education where we could culminate together and still have those last couple of weeks to build off of each other, gain support in the final push. The time apart has made me realize how valuable in-person interaction is, and sometimes how for granted I actually took it.
Our last semester of architecture school was disrupted. I think that camaraderie that architecture school builds is really irreplaceable. And I think that's where the greatest lesson from architecture school came in for me, is that you can't do it alone, that you need other people, whether it be friends and colleagues or whether it be outside professionals. It takes a lot of people to make a project happen and a lot of people to make this profession rewarding.
It really does take a village, and not just to commiserate together in the more painful times, but genuinely because I value all of my classmates and my peers and my friends' opinions on my designs, from something as silly as a door detail to something as large as my general building party. I found throughout my entire 5 years of school that if I approached one of you with a design question and you came over and helped me at my desk, then often it was responded with, actually, I have a question about this. Can you come help me with this? And it was always a two-way street. And often it became a whole discussion with several people around. I really missed that aspect of our thesis semester.
That resonates really well with some of the other lessons we've talked about thus far, especially with discourse and how important it is to discuss your design ideas with others. Not only is that so important throughout architecture school, I think it holds true throughout our entire profession that's ahead of us. There's so many different people involved in the process of designing and bringing a building to life. I think I really realized that throughout my internships. There's the motif of an architect is the conductor of an orchestra. That's so true. We can't do it alone, and we never will be able to do it alone. We are just one piece of the many puzzle pieces, and we're also the one who's trying to fit all the puzzle pieces together at the same time. And I think that's such an important lesson that we learned in school.
There's so many other people involved in the process. There's the engineers, the interior designers, the plumbing, electrical, mechanical engineers, the lighting designers, everyone who's involved, and architects are just one piece of that puzzle. We're assembling this large jigsaw puzzle that then becomes a building. And it's so important, not only in architecture school, but also in the profession ahead of us, for us to work with other people to create the best designs possible, to not only benefit the surrounding community, but the world. We have this duty to help celebrate the world that we live in and to do it in a responsible manner. And I think that that can only be achieved through working with others to get there.
We can't do it alone. This whole idea of discourse and everything, and this is related to something even bigger than architecture. This is bigger than all of us. Communication is how we learn and how we grow and how we prevent the spread of ignorance from everything as simple as learning about codes and understanding how to design a building that's safe, and learning from things that happen to make buildings safer, to design and design theory and that kind of discussion, to issues bigger than ourselves. There's more out there than just us. During this remote working, oftentimes I'd unfortunately be up late working, and I feel, because we were all in our own individual places working, I'd feel so alone and think that I was the only one up. And then all of a sudden at, you know, 4 a.m, I'd receive a text or a frantic call or something from someone else out there. And I didn't feel so alone, but I definitely missed that sense of being together and getting through it together, that being physically together in studio had, that you just can't replicate when you're apart. It's good that we have communities like this to continue to stay in touch with each other and support each other and learn from each other.
This lesson, you can't do it alone, really is a celebration of the community and friendship that architecture school creates. You realize that you need one another to succeed, not only to get a good grade on your project or to be happy with your design, but the moral support and the friendship that is created really does make all the difference. Lesson 10, we'll keep the studio light on for you. A lot of what we have shared have been what we've learned through the trials of architecture school. Architecture school is not for the faint of heart. Not being for the faint of heart, architecture school presents a series of challenges that creates this problem-solving mentality. These trials, at the end of the day, are worth it because we love what we do. Traditional architecture that we study and that we hope to contribute to society as a result of our education and with our profession in the future really provides this notion that because it's so niche, because it is so community-centered, it will really help us create a more passionate world and is really something that we do because we love it. If we didn't love it, it would have been a really painful 5 years. Instead, we were able to rise to occasions and meet challenges and come up with solutions to problems that we wanted to solve. And so I think that's important to think about. Leaving the studio light on because we want to be there is a lesson for us in architecture school, but also a lesson for life. If you love something, it's worth it.
One thing I discovered, especially through watching everyone's thesis projects where we were able to make our own stance and choose our own project, is I got to see places where people became so passionate about certain things and taking a stand and using architecture to make a point about something bigger than ourselves. And I hope that all of our classmates will continue to share those passions with the world and to make a difference through architecture.
Keeping the light on kind of also is a nod to our friendship, because we want to continue to have this dialogue past graduation.
It's worth it to do what you love. A really important quote in my life has been, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And I think that really holds true. And through all of the challenges we've faced throughout architecture school, the breaking points, the sleep deprivation, reiterating our design several times over and over again, through all of those challenges, I think it's so important to realize what brought us to architecture school in the first place. Who are we doing it for? We're doing it not only for ourselves, but all of the people that will help in the future, for all of the lives we'll convert, creating all these places where memories are made. We'll leave the light on for everyone else who wants to take on these challenges with us. For everyone else
who's thinking about going to architecture school, who maybe never had the chance to go to architecture school. Everyone has the chance to contribute to the world that we live in. Architects, especially in the built environment, leave the light on for everyone who wants to help create lasting spaces in big and small communities throughout the world.
I hope I find the same community moving forward. Going into our offices, I hope people leave the office light on for me. I hope that this community of support and learning continues. And I should have every degree of confidence that it will.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our post-studio roundtable discussion has ended because we have to get back to work.
Classicism in Conversation is a production of the Institute of Classical Architecture and Art, a national nonprofit promoting the practice, understanding, and appreciation of classical design. To become a member and learn about additional programming, visit classicist.org. This episode was produced and edited by Justin Kegley and Kellen Kraus. Many thanks to our sponsor, Historical Concepts. Find them online at historicalconcepts.com or on Instagram at historicalconcepts.